This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Later in the show, we'll get a preview of the Oscars. First up this afternoon, the current national average cost of attending a four-year public college is more than $28,000 per year. For a four-year private college, that yearly price tag is now over $59,000, and those costs will continue to rise. There are many ways to help pay for college, including grants, scholarships, work, study, and loans, but parents should consider saving for their kids' future college costs early on. Here to discuss 529 plans and other methods to save for college are David Niedaber with the investment firm of Foster & Motley and local financial advisor Chris DeSimio. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David and Chris, thanks for joining us this afternoon.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for having
Great
me.
Great to be here.
Chris, any key economic numbers we should be looking at today?
A lighter week than normally, but we did get a couple numbers. We got the producer price inflation figures for January. They were down 0.8%, of course, with gasoline prices having fallen. That was January. Of course, it's changed a little bit here in February. Industrial production and capacity utilization numbers came out also earlier this week. They were about flat. Most of the numbers were a little softer than analysts had expected, except a little stronger number on the first-time claims for unemployment. Yesterday morning, they were looking for about 290,000, only 283,000 new claims. So a little stronger jobs number. And then this morning, there's something called the PMI, which is a Purchasing Managers Index, Flash Index. And that was expected to have come in at 53.8. Remember, in that data set, anything over 50 signals an expanding economy. The number we got this morning, 54.3. And so the markets today actually doing a little better. The Dow is up about 49, 50 points right now. All that coming from Boeing, which is up about $4. So with the way the index is calculated, that kind of counts for about half of the Dow's gain, just the one stock. But the rest of the market's about flat.
Okay, so Dow up, S&P down just a little bit.
S&P now has just turned even as we went on the air.
Okay, well, that's good to hear. You know, Chris, whenever we talk about investing on Cincinnati Edition, I always get this message from you that the key thing to do is to save early and save often. Is that a pretty fair...
Save till it hurts.
In a nutshell, is that pretty much what your philosophy is?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess that applies to saving for college as well.
It is, only it's a little different, because when you're saving for retirement, you're saving for a number that theoretically is, well, you know, it's not infinite, but it doesn't really have an end. You don't know how long you're going to live in retirement, though we do know that number is getting longer. It used to be when Social Security was first put together back in the 1930s, the retirement age was set at age 65, but the average life expectancy for men at birth was 58, and for women it was 60. But life expectancies have now been stretched out about 20 years over the last 80 years. So you're planning it for retirement for a number that's not quite as well known as what you think college should be. College should be for, well, though it's increasingly more like five or perhaps longer if the student goes to grad school.
If he takes the five-year plan or goes to grad school.
Or as David was saying before we got on a victory lap. But that's true. So if you start right away, you have an 18-year accumulation phase and then a 4 or 5 year or perhaps even longer distribution phase. So it's a sharper drawdown than retirement.
Yeah, and the complicated thing is you're trying to do all these things at once. There's
right.
The retirement goal, there's the education goal, housing goals, all those things come together, and you only have so many resources.
I was going to ask about that, because that's the one thing that overwhelms me, is you think about all the things that you have to save for. Like you're saying, David, retirement, if you have a high deductible health plan, you might have a health savings account, so you have to consider, how do I save for this? And then there's college costs on top of all that. So what advice do you have for dealing with that, for juggling all that?
Well, there's certainly a lot of aspects that go into it. I agree with Chris that the most important thing is how much you're saving, how long you can do it. That's really what you can take control of. Then the next issues that come up, there's the tax implication of the savings, and those are going to be unknowns, you know, what the tax code is like 18 years from now when Junior goes to college.
Exactly. Though that almost came under attack. And I think that's one of the things that really spurred this interest, because since 1996 or thereabouts, I believe that's when the Section 529 plans first became available, and they've just burgeoned in popularity now. Since then, people just assume that the money you put into that will grow tax-free if it's used for college. And just about 3 weeks ago or so, the current administration...
State of the Union address, I think the president suggested.
Floated
this, right?
a lead balloon or a trial balloon or whatever you want to call it. It went nowhere.
It was lead.
It was shot down from both sides of the aisle, challenging the tax-favored status of these 529 plans, because they are very, very popular with people. And we're seeing it really in our practices in all demographics. Everyone realizes the importance of a college education or secondary, post-secondary education. They're realizing how critical that is to being successful. And these tax advantages are nothing to sneeze at. They're very significant.
So can you talk, David, about how exactly a 529 plan works?
Yeah, so the principle of a 529 plan is you take money that you've already paid tax on, whether it's sitting in a checking account, an investment account, and you put it into one of these state-sponsored plans. So each state sponsors a 529 plan. And you put the money in, you choose an investment. And there's a wide variety of investment options ranging from cash options, like an FDIC bank-insured cash option, to different mutual funds, stocks and bonds, and it's...
Premixed even.
Yeah, those are really attractive because they follow the student through their progression towards college.
So I guess it's the same basic rule when you're trying to decide where to put your money inside a 529 type plan. The more time you have before your kid goes to college, the more aggressive and the more risk you can take, and the closer you get to college, the more you want to be playing it safe with that money.
Exactly, because that money has less time to recover from a bad market. The other thing is that each state has its own little nuance in terms of goodies that are offered to potential savers. So with a 529 plan, it doesn't make any difference what state you live. If you want to if Junior wants to go to the University of Alaska at Juneau, but you happen to live in Ohio, you can invest in the Alaska plan or you can invest in the Ohio plan, but and it won't make any difference. The money is still, it can be used anywhere as long as it's a qualified secondary education. But certain states do extend tax benefits, and it's different for each state. So Indiana has one set of rules. Ohio has one set of rules. So it's important, if you're thinking about doing this, to look not only at the underlying investments, but to see if there are any tax advantages at the state level that will maybe steer you one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of the listeners looking at the Ohio plan, that's a key feature for Ohio residents that create a Ohio-based 529 plan. There's a tax deduction, so that could be worth $100, $120 right off the top for a $2,000 contribution that you make to a plan.
For each $2,000.
Exactly, and it's for 2000, each beneficiary.
Right, so if you have 10 grandchildren, for example, then and you fund it up to $2,000 each, then you could theoretically reduce your Ohio taxable income by $20,000.
Correct, taxable income.
Taxable income, right. It's now in Indiana, though, at some states offer not just a deduction, but they actually offer a tax credit in some states.
Sure, and those terms get tossed around a lot, deduction versus credit. But in general, a credit is always more appealing. That's a full offset of the tax, whereas a deduction is going to depend on what your tax rate is.
Yeah.
Is a 529 plan good for whatever level you're using it at? Would it work for grad school, med school, various different levels of higher education?
Correct. It's very versatile in that it does not count for elementary school or high school. There is a vehicle called the Coverdale plan, formerly Education IRA, that helps with those funds, but it comes with other set of drawbacks too.
Yeah. What are some of the drawbacks?
Well, for starters, you can only put $2,000 per beneficiary in per year. And when you look at the tuition costs for even grade school and high school.
That's the Coverdale, correct?
Correct.
The Education IRA.
Yeah. Okay. It's just not going to go very far. And then once the beneficiary turns 18, you can no longer make contributions. Once they turn 30, if there's still funds in there, those funds have to be distributed to the beneficiary.
Yeah. In the case of 529s, though, what happens, let's say, if you set up a 529 plan for your son or daughter or grandson or granddaughter or niece or nephew, and they don't go to college, or they postpone college for a little bit, or they stay in college longer, can those funds be transferred then? What's involved in transferring balances in a 529 intended for one scholar to another?
And a key question, could I use it for myself?
Sure.
Okay, you could.
Yep.
Okay, and then go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt Chris's question there, but that was just something that crossed my mind. So,
yeah, the 529 is far and away the most popular savings vehicle for higher education. And they come with a lot of flexibility. You can transfer them to another child. If you have a child that doesn't go to school, you can transfer it all the way down to first cousins. So there's a lot of flexibility. You could retire and go back and study what you always wanted to.
And use it for yourself.
Exactly.
So in other words, the rules for 529 don't really specify for whom it's used as long as it is used for college.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to make sure that there can only be one name beneficiary for an account. So it's really common if you have three children, you may set up three separate accounts for them. But the mechanics of it is you change the beneficiary. So one of your children doesn't go to college, you simply change that beneficiary to be someone else.
What happens if someone decides not to go to college and the donor, the parent or grandparent, says, you know what, just take it, I don't care anyway, just take the money out. What are the penalties for using that money for something other than college? And who pays the penalties, the beneficiary taking it out or the grandparent or parent who funded the vehicle in the first place?
Well, the bad news is it's the responsibility of the person that was looking forward and set up the account, the parent or the grandparent. And the tax, the worst case scenario is you put money in, junior doesn't go to college, and there's some earnings that you have to withdraw. So say you put $2,000 into an account, 18 years later it grows to $15,000. That $5,000 of growth has two components of tax if it's not used for higher education. First of all, you'd pay ordinary income tax
on the gain,
$5,000, and then there'd be an additional 10% penalty on top of that. So it's really a steep penalty. So when we look at the tax advantage of a 529 as tax deferred growth over a number of years, like everything, it comes with the trade-off. And that trade-off is if you don't use it for college, there's that penalty.
Yeah. Chris, if there's a limit on how much you can put in a Coverdell education savings account, why would you ever go that direction as opposed to using the 529?
Well, I think a lot of people do that who may have children or grandchildren who are going to a private elementary or private high school. And also, the available investments inside those Coverdell IRAs, it's a broader menu because in various state plans, it's usually mutual funds or a prepaid tuition plan, which is the fixed rate of return. But in a Coverdell IRA, you could invest in the same things that you invest in your own IRA. So if you want to own an individual equity, for example, you can do that. So the Coverdells have a broader menu, but it's not, you can't put as much money into them. With the 529 plans, there still is an upper limit as far as how much you can deposit into these things. There's an annual limit, and then there's a cumulative limit because they don't want people piling millions and millions of dollars into these things. But it's a much bigger number.
Yeah, really the 529 limits are huge. It varies by plan how much you can put in there for a single beneficiary, but something north of $200,000 is the max. So you really have to be saving a lot before that becomes an issue.
And there are even instances where estate planning will call for the use of grandma, grandpa, or parents who are very successful getting the money off their balance sheet and setting these 529s up, because it can move a lot of money off a taxable balance sheet all at once. Now, that's changed a bit because the limits that expose an estate to tax have gone up quite a bit, but it's still something that gets done.
Yeah, and the president came under a lot of heat with his State of the Union address and proposal for the 529 plans, and it came to light that they front-loaded their daughter's plans. And so there's a gift tax implication to putting money into a 529 plan. You can't put more than $14,000 a year, But there's a unique characteristic of the 529s that allow you to put up to 5 years in at once.
All at once.
So any one person could put in $70,000, a married
couple. And that's assuming by front load.
A married couple could put $140,000 per child all at once.
Exactly.
We'll talk more about saving for college after the break, and you can join us with your questions and comments at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guests this afternoon are David Nienaber with Foster & Motley and financial advisor Chris DeSimeo as we talk about ways to save for a college education. And you can join the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And what's a prepaid plan, Chris? How do those work? Is that the same thing as a 529 or...
Back in the old days, when interest rates were something, you know, above 1%, states would allow you to, they would allow you to buy prepaid tuition. It was like a fixed rate of interest assumption, and they were very, very popular back when interest rates were high. But a lot of states just got rid of it because keeping that promise out there, you know, with college costs inflating by a huge number, much more than the overall rate of inflation. And fixed interest rates being so low, it became something that the states were losing money. Most states were losing money on them, so they quit. They cut it out.
So they're hard to find nowadays, if they even exist at all.
Yeah, I think of it a lot like a retirement pension. The prepaid plans act a lot like a pension in that the state is taking on the investment responsibility, and the investor gets a guarantee up front, which sounds great until the state can't meet their obligation to pay for the tuition, where the most common vehicle, the 529 savings plan, is more like a 401k.
Transferring the risk to the saver away from the state.
Exactly.
Now, is it possible to use an IRA, either a Roth or a traditional IRA, to help pay for college expenses?
Yeah, IRAs follow. There's you're allowed to use IRA proceeds without a 10% penalty to pay for higher education costs. Some folks will look at a Roth IRA as a way to take tax-free distributions.
Up to certain limits, though, is that correct? Is there a limit on that?
Well, up to the amount of the qualified tuition.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Does it matter if it's traditional or Roth, or you can go either direction, right, with both forms of IRAs, right?
Yeah, like everything, there's additional rules about taking a Roth within the first 5 years and things like that.
But it would depend on the age of the person taking the money out of the Roth.
Okay. 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join our conversation. And let's talk with Rachel and Taylor Mill. Good afternoon, Rachel. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hello. So my question is, I heard you say that if there was money in a 529 that's not used for school, that there would be, well, you'd have to pay tax on the earnings, and then you'd also have that 10% penalty. So what if your child does go to school and there just happens to be more than enough in the account? Is there still going to be a penalty for, like, remaining funds in the account if you have to, like, take out the rest?
Yeah, so in that case, you saved more than you needed. And it really becomes looking at the other opportunities. You could save it for another child. You could save that in the plan for a long time, for a grandchild perhaps in the future. You could go back to school yourself. But in that case, if those were not appealing options and you wanted to take the money out, then yes, the tax and the penalty would apply.
But there's nothing that forces, David, there would be nothing that would force Rachel to take the money out since the original beneficiary graduated.
Exactly. I see a lot of folks carrying 529 plans without a real clear idea of who's ultimately going to use it. But hey, at some point, someone's going to use these funds.
Rachel, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
And to continue that, so my daughter, she's only 2 years old, and she already has about $25,000 in there. And I'm assuming that the projection on that's going to be probably over $80,000 by the time she turns 18. And I'm thinking, well, yeah, that might not be enough for Harvard, but it's probably going to be more than what she would need if she went to, like, a local school like NYU,
right,
say, for instance. So I was thinking for in the future, what would you suggest I put other money into? Like, is there a different type of account besides for school, but just a like a savings account per se? What other types of savings instruments do you recommend for minors? Yeah.
Wouldn't you at that point perhaps want to set up an education IRA, a Coverdale, or invest in some individual instruments yourself? Pre-fund, you know, Rachel, are you fully utilizing your employer's 401k plan?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So as long as you're maxing out your 401k, think about what's called a Coverdale or education IRA to fund that. Also, you may want to own some individual securities yourself. Keep them on your balance sheet.
Yeah, I think that gives a lot of flexibility just to invest the funds for yourself. Your daughter's 2 years old. A lot of things are going to happen over the next 14, 15 years until she goes off to school.
Yeah, and in fact, that $80,000 may not be enough. Who knows?
Rachel, again, thank you for the phone call. Let's talk with Chip and Erlanger. Good afternoon, Chip. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for the opportunity here. One thing that happened with my 529 plan that no one really told me about until I went to fill out our FAFSA form, that's the student financial aid forms, was that the money you accrue in those 529 accounts counts as income for you and counts against you when you're tabulating your FAFSA number. And it was quite shocking to me that, you know, we really didn't qualify for any financial aid based on this large account that we had set up. In retrospect, I probably would have went with some life insurance or some other product there.
You know, it's interesting. There are a lot of folks who are recommending life insurance as a way to fund college education. But according, there's a website called collegesavings.org. And you may want to do a Google search for other 529 comparative plans. But there are a lot of folks who, according to collegesavings.org, apparently the money in 529 counts about 5% of the balance when you go to fill out your FAFSA, as opposed to money that's directly in your son or daughter's name.
Yeah, the one instance I've heard where the income comes into play on the FAFSA is if there's another relative that has a 529 for your child, and all of a sudden that income starts coming in, that's treated in an unfavorable way. So the workaround I've heard for that is using those funds in the last year of school. So using it for the senior year so that it doesn't show as income on the previous FAFSA reports.
Chris, one thing that comes to mind also is, what about the Uniform Gift to Minors accounts, UGMA? Are those still in play for saving for college educations?
Well, those actually are the assets of the student. Depending on the state, they become the property. The student can petition for them at an early age. And those apparently, according to collegesavings.org, do count higher against them when they go to fill out the FAFSA. But this become much less used, widely used since 529, because when you have one of these uniform gift to minors, you do have more flexibility, but you still have taxable issues. You're creating taxable income for a minor taxpayer. You have to file a return for your minor children. So they're not as graceful and elegantly simple as the 529 plans.
Okay. Get a lot of versatility, though, from the uniform gift to minors accounts, though. You can use them for various different things, right? It's just a matter of control.
Well, yeah, because the child decides not to go to college, you still have to fork the money over, technically.
Yeah, at 21 years old, you have someone trying to make a decision on potentially a lot of money, and a lot can happen in that scenario.
Yeah, so that's considered to be a disadvantage by a lot of people.
Okay. 513-419-7100 to join our conversation. Let's talk with Karen in Montgomery. Good afternoon, Karen. You're on Cincinnati Edition.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have three grandkids, and is there an income limit on me above which I am not able to contribute to one of these 529 plans for them?
Yeah, great question, Karen.
My maximum amount of income, yeah.
That's a really attractive part of a 529 plan, is that there is no income limit that would prohibit you from contributing to your grandkids' 529 plan. The Coverdale that we've talked about a little bit, there are income limits on that, but there are none for the 529 plan.
And in fact, Karen, if you just to make sure if you have it, so you can get a little better sleep at night if you have any questions about them, the IRS themselves, you can go straight to the horse's mouth. And the IRS actually has a frequently asked questions section on Section 529 plans. So you will have that answer. But according to that, there is no, it's not a problem.
Thanks, Karen. We appreciate the call. What about the Humble Savings Bond? Don't these have some benefits if you use them for educational purposes?
They do, but you're not seeing that too much. I mean, you see folks are trying to keep up with college inflation, and that's been a big number, 5, 6, 7%, something bigger than the ordinary inflation. And a savings bond, the current interest rate environment, is just not going to cut it. You're going to be losing each ground each year if you're making 1, 2% on your money.
Yeah, savings bonds are typically paying, what, under 2% right now? Or
There are some newly issued ones that'd be low, but there are some older savings bonds on the actual treasurydirect.gov website. You can type in the serial number of your savings bond. It'll tell you if it's still paying interest and what that rate is. And so just you shouldn't rush to cash them in right away. Go to that website first, treasurydirect.gov, and it's a wonderful little tool. You type in the serial number, it'll tell you what interest rate it's paying, how long it'll pay it for, and after which point it will no longer pay interest.
Yeah, one of the things, I used Ohio's 529 plan when I was saving for my kids to go to college, and I started late, and I wasn't able to accumulate the entire amount to pay for the college education, but I decided that wasn't going to stop me from doing this anyway. So I figured any amount that I could come up with towards college expenses was going to help immensely. Is that kind of a good way to look at it? If you think, boy, I could never save the, you know, $80,000, $90,000 needed, but if I at least save something into these accounts, it's going to have benefits, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think like any kind of savings, it's best if you can just start, even if it's a small amount, and get into some repetitive process. So each month, put $100, a couple hundred bucks away, and as long as that's reoccurring, that'll help.
Yeah, and a lot of the states have plans that are both offered directly with the state or that are available through a financial advisor. So you can do it yourself, work with an advisor, either way. But the important thing is to keep funding it because the cost of college is not going to be going down anytime soon.
Right. One of the nice things about doing this is it can be a family affair, can it, Chris?
It certainly can.
If you're a doting aunt or uncle, you can contribute to your niece or nephew, grandparents. It can be a family thing, right?
We see that quite a bit.
Okay. Well, David and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon. David Niedneber with the investment firm of Foster & Motley and local financial advisor Chris DeSimio. After the break, have you got your Oscar watch party ready? We'll get a preview of this weekend's Academy Awards. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.